tremendous. And thank you for the intelligence while we, talk about the technology. We are especially in the advanced technology. Fortunately, the DHT will catch you. So, ladies and gentlemen, if I may, I will proceed to discuss the DTI's approach to intellectual property policy development and specifically where some of the current legislative initiatives fit in our broader policy thinking. I'm fortunate that Madam Nomondo Mbimayeme from the Comprehensive Intellectual Property Commission, the head of intellectual property at the CIPC, should be giving some information about the CIPC's method work in terms of implementing a sustainable examination, which explains the very important innovation which we've not had in the country to date, and CIPC is making a lot of progress in moving towards the SSE. So my portion of the presentation will talk to the background. It will give just a background as to the work that's gone into policy development at the DTI over the years. It will then look at the objectives of the IP Council Tender Framework, which is a policy document which Cabinet approved in July, on the 6th of July. Then we'll look at we'll describe the immediate issues that the Council Tender Framework addresses. We'll then talk about the inbuilt agenda, where we'll look at the medium-term issues as well as monitoring and evaluation issues, because the framework that we'll see about the phase approach for which I explain. And so we'll explain the immediate issues, then look at the inbuilt agenda, namely the medium-term and the monitoring and evaluation issues. And then my editor will then go in detail about the work that's been done in terms of substantive search and examination. So, by way of background, in 2008, Cabinet mandated the DTI to develop intellectual property policy. In 2013, we were aware a draft national IP policy was released for public comment. And that process of public comment was very useful in that having digested and listened to the stakeholders and engaged with the stakeholders, it became clear that there was a need for introspection. And following a period of deep introspection within the DTI, we have developed a fresh approach to IP policy formulation. Our new approach is based on three main pillars, and our research in intellectual policy development, particularly in the intellectual property area, indicate that the three key main pillars of policy development are the extent to which stakeholders have been engaged and consulted, the capacity, harness the ability of the policymakers to harness the capacity that exists within government on IP-related matters, as well as the degree of intergovernmental coordination. And so these are the three pillars that shall inform our first approach to IP policy development. As of November 2013, we've been proceeding pursuant to these three pillars. And in order to facilitate an approach that harnesses these three pillars, we have developed the Intellectual Property Consultative Framework, which document you furnished the member with. And the document is also available on the DTI website, and it is also in process to be published at the government gazette. So the objectives which the policy development process seeks to pursue are firstly to engender the ethos of the Constitution, to align the country's IP regime to the National Development Plan as well as our industrial policy, as a land-based international industrial policy framework, as well as the various iterations of the industrial policy action plan. To develop the coordinated intergovernmental approach to IP, that's a key aspect. To strike a balance between the creators and users of IP, generally in intellectual property policy making, the key balance that one strikes is the balance between the creators of IP, the innovators on the one hand, and the public who have and at times competing interest in accessing the state innovation. So it's important to be able to balance this kind of competing interest. To stimulate innovation, that's the underlying rationale behind intellectual property, really. To facilitate the development of key industries while striking a balance with public interest. To contribute to the attraction of foreign direct investment and technology transfer. To adopt coordinate the approach to IT in sub-regional, regional, and international forums, and to promote public health. So those are the key objectives that the policy development process shall seek to advance. So, in terms of strategy that we've adopted, you will be aware that indeed the intellectual property policy has been very deeply debated. We recently had the A conference, the National A conference in Durban, and that was also one of the forums where the palpable need to have the policy finalized. So the urgency was actually vented by civil society and various important stakeholders. So we need, on the one hand, to ensure that we do address very key and urgent issues, but on the other hand, urgency in itself cannot be a reason to sacrifice the requisite level of analysis, research that's required in very complex and cross-cutting areas. So, in order to balance between the need for urgent action on key areas on the one hand and then the need for further deliberation and work pursuant to international best practices, is we've adopted a phased approach whereby we delineate the issues between the immediate term issues. We will address in the immediate term, looking at tangible outputs by next year. And then we will also put in place a framework for the inbound agenda that we will pursue pursuant to international practices. So with regard to the immediate issues, they deal with issues such as local pharmaceutical manufacture, the role of the intellectual property system in this area, how can our IP system stimulate and be able to promote our pharmaceutical sector. That's a very key sector in the economy, one of the key areas that's been identified in industrial policy action, how to ensure that our IP system does support this very important objective. The area of sensors, search and examination of patents, as Madam Mello will explain, in the past, the other case generally has not done substantive examination of patients, which means that we've only done formal examination, whereby if someone wants to get a patient in the law, we would fill in the form, pay the fee, and then it's an exclusive right without actually having to meet the patient's ability criteria. Now, of course, that's not an ideal system, and the reason why I've had in the past was for the issues of allocation of scarce resources. You will all know that in South Africa, technical skills are very scarce. It's a country whereby the majority of matriculants today don't even do science and mathematics. So to the extent that we do have technical skills, it was felt in the past that they should be deployed for infrastructure development and the likes, not just in 2017, 1937 patients. But of course, our engagements with stakeholders and various international fora have shown us that indeed it is very important to examine patients substantially. So hence, the DCI and the CICC are working very hard to facilitate a new generation of substantive based examiners. And Madam Manila will brief you about the very exciting and innovative work that they're doing in that regard. So issues such as patent opposition, patent ability criteria, disclosure requirements, all of these are area of the legislation that actually can help to augment the capacity of the new patent examiners once they have been appointed. Parallel quotation is a very important issue in terms of access, ensuring that our legislation allows us where domestically we don't have affordable medicines to be able to import them from other jurisdictions where they are more affordable, ensuring that our laws cater for this. Exceptions to patent rights. We do already have some exceptions to patent rights. One of them is a famous BOLA provision, which was enacted in the 2002 amendments of the Patent Act to allow generic manufacturers to, in effect, stockpile medications until the time that the new supply of the patent run out. They can immediately enter the market, so they can immediately bring competition to the market. So, when you have a competitive market, you will have the effect of lowering prices of consumers. Voluntary licenses. So here we work very closely with the Department of Health. The Department of Health works very closely with the pharmaceutical sector to ensure that where there is medication which is not affordable, that it works with pharmaceutical companies to be able to make them available at low prices. There's also mechanisms such as the medicines patient pool, whereby make the pharmaceutical companies have actually allow, you know, the license to be made available through the international scheme. And so hence we are saying that we need to find ways of ensuring that we continue to use voluntary licensing as a first protocol, and also further incentivize pharmaceuticals to be able to make their medicines available through these voluntary licensing schemes. But we also recognize that it may be that the demand cannot be adequately met through voluntary mechanisms, and hence we need to ensure that to the extent that we do have compulsory licensing within our legislation, that it's workable and that it's something that stakeholders can look with. I think competition law. Now, this is a very important area. As you know, when one has a creative right, one has an exclusive right. Now, of course, having an exclusive right doesn't necessarily mean that that is anti-competitive, but it could be that certain conduct, such as refusal of the license and preventing others from entering the market, etc., some of these practices can be anti-competitive in terms of our competition laws. And as you know, we do have some cases already that the Competition Commission has dealt with, a very famous case of Hazel Dow and others, where the competition legislation was used to facilitate access to medicine. So although we do have some of these cases on an ad hoc basis, we don't have a systematic way of dealing with these issues. So we've seen that in terms of international best practice, for example, the Federal Trade Commission of the United States, the European Commission, they've done study. And in fact, actually comes the guidelines on IP and competition to ensure that IP is not used as an anti-competitive tool. In fact, in the 2009 investigation that the EU launched that led to the guidelines, it was found that some of the anti-competitive practices by some of the pharmaceutical companies actually led to overexpenditure on pharmaceuticals by the government to the tune of about 9 billion euros. Now, one of the practices that they found to be taking place was what they call pay for delay, whereby instead of a generic company entering the market once the patent expires, they will actually pay those companies to remain outside of the market so that the monopoly can remain. So what we're saying is that we need to have in place guidelines in which we can deal with these kinds of practices. So further immediate issues include our international commitments, engagements at international fora, the various treaties, how best to ensure that we are leveraging the treaties to promote our national interests. Geographical location protection, now that's one of the key treaties, and I heard reference to, during Dr. Zala's presentation, Tiny Bush, and I heard also some concerns about roadblocks, etc. And you'll be pleased to know that we recently signed the economic partnership agreement with the EU, and in that effort, we have a protocol on geographical indications. And three of the key geographical indications that are protected from South Africa by the EU include honey bush and rooibos. So it means that no one in the EU can call the product honey bush or rooibos because we have the treaty whereby in fact it's protected in terms of the AGI protocol. And so we essentially need to continue to do such work through the international arena and identify what are the key areas that we must pursue through international operation and working very closely with the DELCO, etc. And so this brings me to the issue of the Interministerial Committee. One of the things which the Cabinet approved on the 6th of July was the establishment of the Interministerial Committee and IP. And I think I already spoke to you about this pillar of intergovernmental coordination. You see, IP is an area that implicates many areas and the work of many departments. So it's not possible for the EU alone to be able to address all of the IP-related issues. So we need to have coordination. And so what we're saying is that we need to have an interministerial committee that will be supported, of course, by a working group of senior officials who actually do the substantive day-to-day work. And the IMC shall serve the function initially as a working group in the IP policy formulation process to ensure that the concerns and perspectives of the various governmental departments are captured in the policy. It shall also serve as a debating forum going forward for all IP-related initiatives. So if there's an IP legislation that is in kind by a particular department, that all the departments can be sure that it doesn't have negative implications for their work, etc. And another key area that the IMC will focus on
saying something, then the next week another officer from another department goes to another forum and say something that is not, you know, consistent. So the IMC will, you know, is very important, you know, purpose. So in terms of the in-built agenda, we have what the medium-term issue as well as the monitoring and evaluation issue. Now in terms of the medium issues, we've identified, you know, issues such as IPR and agriculture, IPR and intellectual property rights, IPR and biotechnology, genetic resources, IPR and climate change and environment, IP and the informal sector, a very critical area, you know, the commercialization of IP, branding of products and goods and services, IPR and the government, policy making in the international arena will continue that work, as well as, you know, capacity building and awareness and enforcement. Now, this is not an exhaustive list. It's very clear in the consultative framework that we are seeking input from all the stakeholders, you know, what are the issues to ensure that we can address them, you know, pursuant to input agenda. And I think what would be important is the fact that now we're in the process of establishing the IMC, and as we continue work of the input agenda, it will be done pursuant to the IMC and pursuant to international best practices, such as, for example, the World Intellectual Property Organization methodology. As members of the World Intellectual Property Organization, we have access to, you know, great resources there in our policy making. So what we're saying is that we want to draw upon these resources going forward. And I think we'd be remiss as members, paying members of such institutions, not to make use of the facilities and resources that they have available. In terms of the monitoring and evaluation, now here we are saying that there's certain legislative initiatives which are already underway. And so what we're saying here is that there's a need to ensure that we don't duplicate resources and don't waste the significant resources that have already gone into these initiatives. But on the other hand, there's also a need to assure the public that to the extent that there are any incongruities, that they will be monitored. And if there's a need to align them to the broader policy framework, that it will be done so, and we've done so through the Interministerial Committee and to ensure that there's congruity going forward. So we've been engaging, as I said, this is a consultative framework. It's a framework that we're using to solicit the view. We're not prescribing anything in this instrument. We're saying that this is the perspective of the DTI. Let us have your perspective, stakeholders. And it's also been very useful in terms of getting intergovernmental coordination. The colleagues from the DSTI, you them already were coming today because we worked closely together. Now we work very closely with various other ministries, and I think the consultative framework has been very key in allowing us to solicit the perspectives of the various stakeholders and government partners. So the conclusion that we continually been consulting with various stakeholders, for example, the American Chamber of Commerce, Full Society, you know, we know the Full Society worked very well and have been giving us, you know, very significant input. Give an example. So I think some of you will be aware that there was an instrument which Parliament, both houses of Parliament, ratified last year. That is the Paragraph 6 system under the WHO. This allows countries that don't have pharmaceutical manufacturing capacity to be able to import drugs from countries that do have pharmaceutical manufacturing capacity, or the compulsory license issue. Now, South Africa for 100 years hadn't ratified that instrument, even though we were one of the major international players in bringing this system to the WTO. But because we hadn't properly engaged with society, they had kept on opposing our ratification. But through this process, we were able to explain to them how this fits into the policy going forward, that this is only one aspect and will continue with the broad policy development. They ended up writing us a letter of support, which I think we have on record in the portfolio of competitive trade industry. So as I say, this process has been really helpful in terms of getting the stakeholders on board and the continuous consultation. The various embassies such as Swiss, Americans, among others, intergovernmental organizations, NEDLAC. And you know, one of the initiatives that we'll be doing is that in September we're going to be hosting two workshops with various intergovernmental organizations. The first one is the World Trade Organization. They are going to give a capacity building workshop to the Interministerial Committee on IP, and then followed very shortly afterwards by a UN workshop with UNCTAD, the United Nations Conference on Trade and Development, as well as UNDP, United Nations Development Programme. And these shall serve as stakeholder engagement platforms, whereby we're going to engage with the various stakeholders on the document. And by the way, the stakeholders have already busy with analyzing the document because we've got a public comment period that's open until the end of September. So by the time we have the workshop, we'll have already digested the instrument. And so we can show that that forum is one where we can have robust discussion to show that at the end of the day, we develop a policy instrument that is based and that's informed by the concerns of the stakeholders on the ground. So, as I say, we are busy with this public consultation process in terms of going forward. We'll continue to engage our stakeholders and governments and partners. And we're hoping that by April of next year, end of March, we'll be able to have completed the policy formulation process that deals comprehensively with the different issues and sets the framework for the input agenda going forward. With that, my thanks for your attention. I'll hand over to my colleague, Madame Nomonde Mamena.
And the reason why we are doing this, maybe let me a little bit here. Why we are doing substantive special examination of patients? As you know, CIPC has been doing something in the line of registering of patients, and probably some of you are asking, what have you been doing all along? What CIPC has been doing, we have been doing formal examination, meaning we're looking at the file. As we receive the filing, we check, we look at whether this particular form is here. The title, is the title here? Who is the inventor? And so on and so on. And to see whether there is an address. So we've been just checking. As a result, we don't even have an idea of what kind of patents in our register we have. Are they strong enough? So you can ask a lot of questions along those lines. And this is why we think, you know, building capacity in this area is good for the country, because as you know, IP in patents is one of the key tools that we can use to actually create and promote innovation and build the knowledge economy, if you may say that. So we haven't been looking at whether the application at our table does it meet the criteria of patentability in the first place. We haven't been looking at that. We haven't been looking at whether it has industrial applicability or whether it has an inventive. Is there enough inventive step? We haven't been looking at those things. And this, what we are doing now and what we are preparing for, will enable us to actually scrutinize and actually search and be comfortable and confident that the applications and the registrations that we are taking into our file are worthy to be there. And of course, our colleagues from the Department of Science and Technology have already indicated another criteria that we have to look at when we do our lab as search and examiner. We have to look at whether this claim does it have any IP in it? Does it have any indigenous knowledge in it? Is it disclosed? You know, so there's a lot of pertinent, important things for the development of this country and innovation as a whole that we haven't been doing, that this process this will enable us to do. I mentioned that one of the things that we have done, we have gone to benchmark. You know, we went to Singapore because we heard that Singapore, as one of the developing countries, is doing this thing well. So we went there to look at their systems, to look at what kind of resources are important for us to have in order to actually build a reputable and good system of substantive search and examination. So we've been talking, in fact, before we have had a consultative round tables with stakeholders, with patent lawyers, with interested parties and other departments to discuss these things. Among the things that we discussed is what model are we going to be using in South Africa, because all the countries, they decide on the model they want to use based on their developmental level of development. And we have looked at, I've put in there the models that we could have used. The full search and examination system, I'm not going to go into technical details of it, but it is just to say we take this application and we do full search and examination on it up until the end of the process. And there's a validation system, and some of the developed countries, if I may just share with you, when they heard that we are implementing, we are preparing for the implementation of this, they came to us to say, listen, why do you want to start this thing from scratch? It's a lot of work. And you know, you will be like some of your friends who have a lot of backlogs on this thing and so on and whatever, you know, trying to discourage us from doing it. And of course we looked at it, but we still insisted that it is important for us to build our own capacity. So we know that there will be teething problems in this because where we went, we they shared with us what we should expect and so on. So we know there will be teething problems, but we want to put systems in place to actually be able to manage those teething problems if they happen. And so we're not going the validation system, where what it means is that everything that comes from outside, internationally, we validate by looking at, okay, it comes from the U.S., okay, we know U.S., they've got a valid search and examination program, so we just check them, we pass it, we accept that, okay, it's okay. So we said we're not going to do that either. And of course, we looked at the system that Singapore used when they started, which was a combination of a few models, and we thought we would rather take this. What we have decided in our consultative with those stakeholders that we are consulting with is that it would be prudent for us to look at a hybrid system together with a phased-in approach. You heard my colleague when he presented, he said the IP policy is suggesting that we are going to be dealing with things in a phased approach, and therefore we are going to do that after identifying the fields. We are going to say, okay, which fields are we going to start with? Because remember, we've got only limited resources. We will be having 20 examiners. So we will be together with the DTI and our stakeholders, identifying what setup, what field we should start with the search and examination first. And then, of course, we are going to link that with outsourcing. We've been talking to countries that have done this thing well, so that when backlogs start, if we do get backlogs, because some IP offices told us that, you know, for some reason, when you start with the substantive search and examination, there is all of a sudden a lot of applications. At the moment, we receive 10,000 applications, patent applications, or patent filings a year, and 90% of those are international. So 90% are applications that we receive from other countries. Only 10% of that is from it's local. And so you can see also the challenge that we have. I don't believe that it is because South Africans are not innovative. And I think we will start now. We have started talking about what else we can do to enable even small business to actually come up with their applications and actually register them. One of the barriers that we have seen, or that we have identified, which is an obvious one, is the cost of registering a patent. At the moment, for you to register a patent, if you go to, of course, you can't come to the office direct, you know, you have to have 40,000 rand to register a patent. And we are engaging, we started engaging, you know, because we knew in the unit, engaging DTI and other, you know, they have, you know, grants and so on and funding to say, this can't work. If we are serious in getting youth and getting small business to actually register, protect their invention, we can't expect them to have 40,000 rand from the beginning. We have to do something as government. So this is one of the issues that will be on the table, to see what we can do to actually unblock that blockage. So yes, we are going to use a hybrid system. We will do such for identified fields, and then of course if we have more than we can do, we can outsource to some of the countries. It doesn't come cheap, because even for sourcing, we have to be careful what in the process of work, what is it that we are outsourcing, because some of the things we want to do ourselves. So we still have to look at that and have a very clear indication. Now, I just thought that the members would be interested to see the profile of the examiners that we have recruited. We've been told that for this thing to work, go and get scientists, people who are experts in their field. You will train them in patent law, in South African law later. So we went and got 20 examiners, of which 11 of them are PhD, you know, they hold PhD degree, and 6 of them have got a master's, 2 have a B honors, and 1 a B degree. And of course, 11 of them are male, and 9 of them are female. We were very careful in making sure that we come close to those numbers as far as gender is concerned. So, you know, yeah, maybe let me because I will see. Now, those are the disciplines that we are looking at, that the examiners are holding. 3, you know, you can see there. I think it was difficult for us to get people in the electrical industry, you know. We just got 1. But we thought it's a good start. And then we've got 3 who are experts in physics, biotechnology and molecular biology, biochemistry and chemistry. I mean, this resonates well with you guys in the science and technology people. So, yeah. And then, of course, those are our first group of patent examiners in training. And then I did mention that it's a 2-year program. We have already started courses with, you know, there are distant learning courses with WIPO. They have done, I think, most of those. We they have also done patent treaties. We have identified modules within the course that are general in nature, that each and every examiner, regardless of which country they come from, have to know. And we have, been talking to other patent offices who are willing to help us to actually do some of the training for us. So those are the courses, the advanced course that they will start doing in 2017, patent information search strategy, basics of patent drafting and IP management. Those are some of the institutions that have helped us in the training. We have WIPO. WIPO plays a very important role in training. Our patent examiners have been, some of them, I think 12 of them have been to Japan. Japan actually together with WIPO, they funded that, you know, those trainees go there to receive part of the general training. We have with our big friend Russia, who is much more I think advanced within the BRICS, have also helped us, and we have sent some of our examiners there in March. We have also sent some of our examiners to China for the training. Now, most of these BRICS countries, as you know, have already started with the substantive pattern examination. And we are sort of like, you know, running behind. We hope that we will catch up soon. WIPO and Austrian office have also helped us, and they've taken some of our trainees to their office. Now we are talking with UK. In fact, as I speak, we have UK trainers at our office doing some modules as well, helping our patient examiners. Now, EPO also is very keen in helping us there. They hold one of the well-known and one of the light search engine, which they call EPOPNet. And it's a search engine, it's a general search engine made for precisely for examiners. Now, there are a lot of other search engines that you can use, but they were made for patent lawyers and other people who just want to see prior art and so on. This particular one is tailor-made for patent examiners. And so we are talking to the EPO to help us there. And what another thing that makes that attractive is that if you do buy this search engine, it comes with training. So we will be getting training as well as the search engine. And then, of course, our South African University. You know, we thought when we started, we will do, once our examiners are graduated, they get a master's, because it's a 2-year thing. And it seems like it's going to be difficult to do that. We just lost the first group because we have to accredit, you know, universities have to go and accredit and do all these things. So we thought it's fine, we will do general principles of South African law. So we've been talking to other universities as well, but I think the university that is likely to go with us is the university, Berkeley University. You see, because some universities, they say, no, then, you know, to start a training course for 20 people, you know, it's not, yeah, and it's too short. You know, though they have those problems. So, but the best university is actually keen, and I hope that they will be able to help us focus on what the examiner needs to know in terms of the South African law. And in this case, you would note that patent lawyers will be involved in telling us because they've been, you know, going. And this is one of the things that we can't outsource. South African law is South African law, so we have to do it with our law specialists. Principles of patent law, we can, you know, we are doing all those training modules. Now, the goal is that come 2018, we're hoping with the process that DBI is doing there, we hope that the laws and the IP policy would have been settled and put to rest by then. And we are running so that by 2018 we have our examiners ready to examine. And so that's why we are running these processes in parallel. We are hoping to have a third round table quickly to clean out and to clarify some of the issues that we are not clear about, like what fields are going to start with, you know, and look at the principles that we are going to have as we develop our guideline or the manual that the examiners are going to use when they start examining. Members, Chair, thank you very much. My presentation.
Thank you very much, Mabela, for a very, I think when you presenting, you feel the pain that you were having to really look after our resources. And thank you very much for the presentation. And we are now going to allow members to ask questions if there is any. Looking around here, I don't see so many members on this, but I can see it. And if you can give an indication if there is a question. Honorable member.
I thank you, Chair, and for the presentation. I was just interested to understand I see there are countries and that you are interacting with around this. I was asking myself, who is good at this? I'm not saying you are chosen to hold me, shouldn't have. I'm just interested to know who might be good here, who we can learn from, but also understanding where we come from as a country, that, you know, we're still we're advanced, but at the same time we still have a long way to go. But it's very interesting to see that. When you were saying that universities were not responding, I said to myself, that responded, and you said better. I said, yeah, because, you know, if you go to University of Uganda, you talk this stuff. It's like our priorities to get this degree. People don't see the importance of IP. It's not seen as business. Yet it is, and it's a very important aspect of business itself. Maybe. I end up confusing myself, but thanks, Chair, for that.
Any other questions? I think from my side, maybe it's not a question. Mamela was saying this is impossible, but we realize it's Mamela was saying this, so what do you want to do to different kinds of policy different ones. But it will be maybe, like you were saying, to dream what should have a respect before. I think if you want to have a picture of one, you can just have, you know, really relevant respect. I think if you want to have a picture of one, credibility is one of the things that I can think of. I'm not an expert in this field, I might be very something that you think I should be. But just thinking that there's a lot of work that you need to do. Is there any other questions?
I'm just a comment that your grandchildren is very to think having a training in the social documentation is very interesting. And very interesting also to see how passionate you are on the issue of intellectual property. And we're taken for granted. We've been abused, lack of a better word. And I think with the type of detail that you are putting into ensuring that this is a success, even those developed countries will see that they will not just work over. Because they thought they will just dump everything or whatever comes from the US or UK is possible to say cannot be changed. So we want to thank you for all those details that you're taking care of. And we know that you're working very close with the science and technology in that area. So we'll be there also to back you up and to unblock the objects that they are. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
We are
going to
break
now for lunch. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Can you respond on it? I'm sorry. I'm
going to lunch here. Remember that I want to.
Well, I can see the honorable members already.
Yeah, are tired. But thank you, Chair, and thank you for that note of encouragement in the work that we're doing. And I just want to reiterate that we can only succeed if we all are cognizant of the fact that our goal is one. We want to make this place a better place, economically also for everybody, and especially for those we are called to serve. The honourable member asked the question about who are good in this thing and your choice of maybe benchmarking and who are you looking at, so to speak. And if I may answer that, it is very important, and luckily it is good because we've been engaging with these countries in multilateral field. I mean in the WIPO in WIPO committee. So we know we have a sense of what they believe in, and so we don't want to be poisoned, or we don't want to expose our examiners to some of the poison, so to speak, with lack of a good word. So when we know that the reason why we identified and actually visited Singapore is that Singapore have amazed developed countries by the success they had on the program. When they started 5 years ago, 5 or 7 years ago, and they have already built a very recognized IP office, and now they are helping the region as well, to do sustained research and examination. They told us that they started with 20 people as well, and now they have grown. They have grown so much. So we look at these countries that have been successful. We went to Brazil because we looked at all the big countries because of their level of development are the same with us, so that we can be cognizant of our level of development as well, and be able to incorporate those things that will make us successful in what we are doing.
But we want to copy some of the things that the developed countries are doing that are so special, that are keeping them, you know, on the up and up as far as their work is concerned. For instance, we know that EPO is good, and they are using this EPOCnet, which is the search tool. You can't do examinations without that search tool. Or you can go and buy others, you know. But this one, if you have this one, we have also talked with our friends, the Greeks and some of the countries that we meet in Geneva. They say EPOCnet is number one, but it's expensive. And they also told us how we can, you know, have it and not pay so much, you know, because they use it per user. So we can buy one unit and then four people to use in one unit. So we have engaged with these countries to find out how best we can do this thing, so that we don't even make the mistakes that they made. So we're looking both at countries at the same level of development with us. For instance, the UK, we identified the UK in terms of some aspects of law of patent, because the UK uses the same law like ours. You know, they use the common law. So we can look at the case studies they have, the problem. They are really talking, they are teaching, you know, going through the case studies they have, what went to court on patents, why, what was the finding, whether the finding was right. So that's the best way of learning. That's what they are doing now with our teams of patent examiners in the office today. So we do pick and choose. What is it that we want these countries to help us with based on what we want our examiners to be exposed to? I hope I answered that question. Yes, ma'am, there's a lot, and it's a challenge that we have to embrace. There are a lot of challenges that we think are on the way, but with the partners that we have, we think we will be able to move and make this thing a success.
Thank you very much. On that note, I think we are going to break for lunch now.